of the financial center. Also, to officially open the meeting. I'm the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Finance, joined by members of the Standing Committee, Honorable Dr. George. Honorable Rebecca Mutai, Honorable Paul Abrams, Honorable Daniel Nkomo, and Honorable Sima Milet, others who join us in the process. So you are welcome, and the meeting is officially open. This is not the first meeting. So it's a continuation of what has been done before. So we'll start from where we have left. We're not going to start fresh. There has been a meeting convened by the Standing Committee on Finance and the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, which ultimately compiled the first report on the transformation of the financial sector on the 15th of November 2017. So it's exactly 2 years from now. So we'll start from where we have left in November 2017. So it should not be like we are coming here for the first time and we want to theorize and tell us about the theory of transformation. No. We want progress. Because if you study that report, it gives responsibility to each and every stakeholder that participates in this forum. So it is very important that from last time, this is the responsibility given to us, all the recommendation, and this is how far we are. All stakeholders are here, except for NEDLEC. I don't remember NEDLEC coming for reasons of their own, Mr. Mumunias. I don't know who talked to NEDLEC. We don't take kind of NEDLEC. I think it must be very clear. I will write a letter to them. We invited everybody in time to come to this meeting. Yesterday they told the secretary in the morning that they are waiting for somebody to approve their travel arrangement. Chika, late in the afternoon, we got the invitation late. Members, this is Parliament. If Parliament calls you, you don't have to give excuses. This is an arm of government, like court and executive. There are three branches of government. It's the legislature, it's the executive, and the judiciary. If we invite you and you give us excuses, we'll subpoena you and there will be consequences. You must read the constitution very well. So we don't just invite you because we have got nothing to do and we are powerless. We have got power. We'll subpoena you and there will be dire consequences. So don't mimic what NEDLEC is doing. It's very bad. Congressmen, we must talk to them. They must never do that again. It's to undermine Parliament. If it was the court, it would be a contempt of the court. And there were going to be serious consequences. And there will be consequences for not attending a parliamentary meeting. I must make this statement right at the beginning, that people must respect institution of the state, this particular parliament where it belongs. With that as it may, we have to proceed because we don't have much time. This afternoon we have the sitting of the parliament to pass bills of tax and other related business. So each sector is given 15 minutes to present. So what you'll have to do is to speak to the slide. This is not a summit. Treasury will have to convene a summit. This is a follow-up meeting, and we give you limited time. But when Treasury convenes a summit, that's where all of us will have enough time to make all the presentations. So I want us to understand right from the word go, because I can see some of the slides are long, but you understand the sector much better, you will be able to stick to those slides so that we get the thrust of what is contained in your presentation. Let me right away invite the National Treasurer to make the first presentation. Mr. Ishmael Momonia.
Thank you, Chair, and apologies that I lost my phone in the taxi as I came here, so I got here a few minutes late, but I got it back, so I think it goes with age.
Did you forget?
No, I forgot it in the Uber, but I've got it back, so apologies, I was just took a bit of time to get. Chair, no, thank you for this. I think I've got my colleagues Paula and from Tobago here on the Treasury. I don't think you've met them before formally as a committee. But let me say that we welcome the hearing on the transformation on the financial sector. And Chair, I've just updated an old presentation for two reasons. One, that we haven't had the benefit of briefing the committee, the new committee, just on the regulatory framework as it applies to the financial sector. And also, I think it does reflect that perhaps not much, there's not been much progress for whatever reason the last 2 years. As you're aware, the STEM committee and the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry had these joint hearings in 2017, and it concluded with a report that was adopted. And I think those, you know, we take as a start just to look at the proposals that emanated from it. The most important, and I think the way the committee looked at it, is obviously to get real transformation, you've got to get all the players involved to be active participants. And hence the committee felt, the joint committees felt, that we should have a financial sector summit, which was to be convened by NEDBANK. And Chair, we are just one of not just one of four key stakeholders at NEDBANK, but even within NEDBANK, we're part of government, there are other departments and so on. So I'm also concerned that NEDBANK has not actually come today. In a sense, they needed to explain why the summit hasn't taken place. We had all hoped it would take place last year. I think the Financial Sector Transformation Council is here, and they've been currently working to update the financial sector code targets. And I think, Chair, this just recognizes that, and for reasons I'm going to show, the financial sector is a relatively unique sector, and really, in our view, needs to be held to higher standards for transformation than, say, what's required from the generic BEE codes. So, and I think it's been our view, even as we expressed it in the hearing, that the whole question was, are the targets given in the sector code strong enough or tight enough? It's actually actually very hard to read the codes, Chair. And sometimes I think when there's so much complexity and there's government fault, it's easy not to deliver because you can get away from and hide behind the complexity. I think, Chair, too, in the last 2 years, the impact of slow economic growth has had an adverse impact, I think, generally on transformation. And certainly, I think, the period of state capture has also had an adverse effect on mass-based transformation. So I think those are factors just to take into account. So, Chair, I'm going to just, in a way, you know, when I looked at what we had presented and tried to update, it's very clear that some of the questions we asked then are still relevant. And the key question we asked then is, why has current transformation initiatives not been as successful as we had hoped or as required after, that time we said 50 years of freedom, and now add on the number of years we should have freedom. And just make the obvious point, I think economic transformation, deracialization, and reducing inequality are critical for political stability. The priority for trading has always been that we have a mass-based and sustainable transformation rather than just transformation for a few. And if you look at the system, we can point to tax incentives that they are to promote empowerment in employee share ownership schemes. But I think our bigger point is we see the financial sector must work for all South Africans, not just for some South Africans. And that the critical issue really is that we generate more asset wealth for more South Africans. And I should add that the objective is to be, you know, we should put the word net asset wealth, because it doesn't help that someone is so geared that if you really, you can, they may have assets, but if they have huge debt which they can't pay, their net wealth is actually very low. And that's what we think needs to be refocused. I think the current BEE framework that we have also needs to be updated. I think we pointed out that there are weaknesses, and we as government need to update it. And in a way, clarify what do we mean by transformation, because the code has specific outputs. For the financial sector, we've always had more than the basic elements in the code, because we felt that there are other issues that the financial sector needs to be measured on. And I will get on to how the financial sector differs from other sectors. And I want to emphasize, Chair, in saying this, it mustn't be seen as an excuse for not doing transformation. The point is, it is a unique sector, but we also feel that it needs to be held to higher standards for the type of transformation that the financial sector can facilitate. So we support interventions to the financial sector to support the South Africa better. And basically, this is an initiative that government adopted in 2011 when we produced it. Booklet, a policy document that was adopted by Cabinet at the time, to safer financial sector to serve South Africans better. Now, Chair, I just want to touch on what we mean by transformation, especially in the financial sector. There's obviously the financial sector commitments that you have, and they were certainly in 2017 they've been reviewed. But we also in the financial sector feel that access is very important. So aside from the fact that if you look at the financial sector, you've got to ensure that they are prudentially safe. So in the Twin Peaks system that was being done at the time that the committee looked at the transformation issues, that we introduced two regulators, prudential and a market conduct regulator. Prudential regulator is there, and in the Reserve Bank, and they will be presenting, their job is to make sure that a financial institution is in a healthy financial state, that it's in a state where it can deliver on its promises. You deposit your 1,000 rand in a bank, you expect that when you want it, and when you're supposed to get it, that the money will be there. The bank promises you that the day you want your money, it's a short-term deposit, that you will get it whenever you walk into the bank and ask for it. Similarly, if you're a member of a pension fund, you want to know that in 20 years' time when I retire, that the money will be there when you want it. So you've got to have prudential regulation, and I've not put that in that slide, but over and above that, we've tried to ensure that we protect customers and the way financial institutions do business, that it's done in a way that's friendly to the customer. So that and the big issue in the financial sector is what are the fees being charged, and the whole issue of reducing fees and charges, getting more appropriate products, protecting consumers, having the ombuds, all of those are important bits in the financial sector. Indeed, I think one of the big problems we have is that households are very indebted today. And that in itself, I think, is one of the big challenges that we face as a government, because households are so stretched. Obviously, part of it is to do sufficient market development, whether it's dealing with dedicated banks, cooperative banks, microinsurance, SMMEs, and quite important as an objective is financial inclusion. Are the financial services, are they serving poor households, are they serving SMMEs? Because these may not be very profitable sectors, and they may be deemed to be more risky by a financial institution, but these are areas that we need to certainly look at in the next slide. So what we then get to, Chair, is so I think there's a number of issues one needs to take into account, the regulatory framework, but that there is a potential for conflict. A potential for conflict between these different objectives government has, and certainly I think one of the defining features for the financial sector was the 2008 global financial crisis, which saw the introduction of a very strict regulatory regime, particularly as they apply to the banking sector. And the reason, Chair, is that if you look at a bank, it tends to be, if it gets infected in any part of the system, it can infect the entire system. So I haven't put there is a slide later, but the other objectives that we have relate to the integrity of the system, your anti-money laundering legislation, and there's very strict laws that each bank must know all their customers, for example. And not knowing your customer is not an excuse when it comes to the law of it. So one needs to take some of those things into account. And I think the key issue, obviously, for meaningful transformation in the financial sector is not merely a question of ownership, but how the sector supports real economic activity. What services are provided to customers? Who owns the firms that manage the assets? How sensitive are they to the country's needs and challenges? How are the assets in the system put to use? How do they procure services? Do they only use other big companies? Do they use smaller players? Who decides how those assets are to be invested and put to use? Those are all very critical questions when you look at the role of the financial sector. And if we just left it to the generic codes, you would almost give an excuse to the sector to do very little. I think, Chair, in terms of the financial sector, and just to make the point, that the financial sector acts as an intermediary. It mobilizes savings, so it has people and institutions who may be saving. It has a system for allocating credit. It provides payment services. It facilitates trade. In a South African context, access to finance and financial services are key to achieve economic and social transformation. Also, I think it needs to be borne in mind that the funds controlled by the financial sector actually don't belong to the financial institution. They ultimately belong to their customers or their clients. And financial firms are merely custodians of other people's money. I guess in a similar way as we are in government, custodians over the money that's in the crystal. And if you look at the size of the sector, it's pretty large. Your pension assets are just larger than the total GDP of the country. And similarly, banking is about the same size. Your long-term insurers, mostly life insurance, make up about two-thirds of GDP. And your short-term insurers are relatively smaller than our total GDP. And if you look at unit trusts and CISs, they tend to make up half of GDP. So you're looking at a sector which I think is about, what, 4.5 times GDP or so, or almost 5. I don't have the latest figures. Chair, I'm not going to go through all of this. These are just nice diagrams for members to see, you know, just to obviously brief you on how government works. The figures here are updated. As I said, I am drawing on our 2017 presentation, so I haven't updated the figures as such, but this shows you just in trillion rand how big the sectors are. You see that your private pensions and insurance are the biggest at 2.8 trillion. And I think just to give a perspective of using 2015 numbers, how large the number of players are. And Chair, I should add that generally in the financial sector, you find that a few firms dominate. In banking, they dominate in long-term insurance, they dominate in short-term insurance. And what you find is that when we did our FSAP, which the IMF does, every few years, they do a review of the financial system. And they found that not only in South Africa that you have very few firms in some of these sectors, and that often is the case in countries like Sweden, for example, in the number of banks, Canada, Australia. But the difference is that the interconnectedness is probably more than those countries, which does expose us to this. So in other words, the same companies that dominate banking will dominate long-term insurance, for example. To move on, I think, Chair, therefore, it's very important, I think, when we look at it, what do we mean by transformation in the financial sector? We obviously mean must be a deracialized financial sector, reflective by ownership and management, or reflective of Black South Africans, enterprise development and procurement of services involving Black households and businesses, access and inclusion of Black households, and effective usage of financial services, promoting asset wealth of Black households, providing better access to funding for small businesses. We also need to have a developmental and competitive objectives, and also to take into account funding of infrastructure and capital projects. Those are the kinds of factors that we take into account if you want a holistic approach towards transformation and ensuring that the impact of transformation is transformative, meaning a financial sector that works for all South Africans, helping South Africans to save, borrow, insure, transact. So we clearly need a holistic approach, and I think that was the idea that when we have the summit, that straight away we felt that even the sector codes were not going far enough, and that we needed a conversation of how we could improve the approach to transformation and make it much more meaningful for households. So just to focus then on the... Okay, just to summarize then, I think the issue is, and I'll just leave the slide, to do the can we also ensure that the fee codes are sharpened? And I'm happy to see that the Financial Sector Transformation Council, since, is doing a review of these targets with a view to, I think, going further along the lines. I think, Chair, I've just left some slides which members can look at. I should point out that one of the, I think, weaknesses in the code that you have is I don't think that it takes into account how to deal with ownership for listed companies. Generally, you'd find that if, and the Treasury has produced just a summary of ownership patterns on the JSE, that you'll find that most of those companies are owned by institutional investors. It could be 34 or 37% foreign, or 40% foreign, 40% domestic institutions. Direct ownership is very small. And yet, within direct ownership, you might find a third is black and two-thirds may be white, if you look at it in those terms. But I think there's a better way to look at it is to look at ownership and management, whether that's reflective of South African society. I think one needs to take into account that our regulatory obligations include capital requirements that banks and insurers have to have. And, Chair, that banks particularly are very intrusively, intensively, and effectively regulated. I think the key point to note is that for ownership, when it comes to a significant shareholder cannot buy banking shares by borrowing from another bank. You've got to actually have your own cash to buy a significant banking share. But I think Mr. Kamlana is here, he can explain that. So that's a point to take into account. I'll just move on. I think there's just slides that will help members, I think, on some of the objectives. And Chair, just to end, that what the previous standing committee, when we looked at the Financial Sector Regulation Act, there are explicit transformation targets that have been, or phrasing, wording that's included in current legislation, both in the Financial Sector Regulation Act and in the Insurance Act. And what's on its way is a copy book, where we also intend to, which deals with the conduct of financial institutions, where we also intend to cover this area. To conclude, Chair, the financial sector and must do more to transform and be transformative. That's been our approach. I think that transformation has suffered the last few years due to lack of economic growth and state capture. Some sectors within the financial sector, I think, need to transform more than others. I take asset management industry, where there's been little progress, I think, in transforming. And as I said, the Financial Sector Transformation Council is looking at reviewing some of these targets. And I think we too, as government, need to update the approach we take to post, take into account some of the factors that are placed. Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, the progress will obviously get from the industry players who are presenting today.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Omonia, for the presentation. The next agenda. Financial Sector Charter Council.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
I will take 2 minutes and hand over to the
SGP.
Okay. Chairperson, we are aware that it is a new committee, and therefore I will quickly run through the background of the SGP. It consists of constituent members from five broad categories. We have the Trade Association, which have ASISA, BASA, SAIA, SAFCA, JSE, BASIDA, FIA, IBA. We have organized labor, which is COSATU, FEDUSA, and NACTU. We have community, which has various organizations such as SAMCO, SACP, and many others representing the youth, women, and people with disabilities, to name a few. There is APSIP, which represents black professionals and black businesses in the financial sector. We have government, which represents the people of South Africa as a whole and as a leader of society. Government is represented by presidency, national treasury, and DGI. So those are constituent members of the financial sector transformation council. Chairperson, honorable members, it is our view that all constituents of the FFTC are taking transformation seriously. We say this knowing full well that we've got to do much more, all of us, to change the landscape for the better, sooner rather than later, and faster. We also know that now, and in the ensuing future, it is time to do, to implement, and not only just to talk. So, Chairperson, I have on my left the FFTC Chief Operations Officer, who is also the acting CEO, Ms. Sigamene. She will take the committee through our presentation. Importantly, she will communicate key messages for the FFTC. Chief amongst them will be feedback on progress that we've made since Parliament released its recommendations in November 2017, following the hearings on the stage of transformation in the sector. She will also give us progress that we have made as the FFTC towards finalizing the 2017-18 report on the transformation of the sector. We intend to finalize and publish the report before the end of this year. Lastly, she will touch on an important element of the FFTC, which is the need to capacitate and resource it appropriately so that it is a powerful instrument that can give effect to the work it must do. There was a comment from the chair earlier that NEDLAC is not around. I wanted to say to the chair that the NEDLAC of the financial sector is here, and that is the FFTC. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and we thank you for the opportunity to come back and report on progress in terms of the recommendations that were made by this committee as to how far we are, and also to give the committee an understanding of where we are going as the FFTC. The Chairperson, or the Chairperson of the FFTC, has already highlighted the things that you will be briefing the committee on. So I will go to the slide that just gives an overview of what has happened in the FFTC over the past 2 years. Right after the hearings that we had and the report was issued in November 2017, we then gazetted the Financial Sector Code on 1 December 2017. And then also in 2017, the FFTC had a stress plan where they undertook to then extend their mandate to be just beyond, to be beyond just monitoring BBBE. This mandate, Chair, seeks to let the FFTC look at broader issues, not limited to transformation, but more looking at economic growth and how this sector can contribute towards that. So this is one of the highlights of what the FFTC is looking at doing going forward. And also in 2018, as we were initially introduced as the Financial Sector Charter Council, in 2018 we rebranded and changed our name to the Financial Sector Transformation Council, or FFTC. And we also then increased the target for access to financial services and empowerment financing, as we had undertaken to do so during the hearings. And we then began with the process of reviewing the code, which was one of the recommendations that were made by this House in 2017. That process began early this year in February. And as the chairperson said, we are also working on finalizing our annual state of transformation report, which we are going to publish before the end of this year. In terms of implementation of the recommendations that were made by this committee, we have implemented on some of the recommendations, and we are also in the state of implementing others. If I go to some of those recommendations that we made, one was that as the FFTC, we need to create awareness of the FFC so that there could be increased participation by financial institutions. We have developed a strategy which we are implementing. We are engaging as much as we can with financial entities and other stakeholders in order to bring them to understand what we are doing and what the FS codes are all about. Another recommendation was that we need to increase the FSC targets in the codes. As I indicated earlier, we started reviewing the financial sector codes earlier this year, and among the issues we are looking at as we review the codes, we are looking at which targets need to be increased and how should they be increased. And the other recommendation was that we need to encourage financial institutions to submit their reports to the FFTC. We have also, as part of our engagement with the financial institutions, encouraged them to report. And not only that, also the COFI bill now also requires financial entities to submit transformation plans whenever they apply for license renewal. So in terms of those transformation plans, then they are also required to indicate if they are not meeting their targets, how they are planning to meet their targets and when. Also in the financial sector codes, we have a provision that allows us as the FFTC to name and shame those who do not comply with EEE and those who do not provide reports to the FFC. We are also we also have a provision that allows us to penalize those who do not report to the FFC. And this being the first report, we have chairperson also implemented that provision. We are hoping that this will make an improvement in the next report. There was also an issue that was raised that we should ensure that the decisions on what is called once empowered, always empowered is consistent with the BBBEE Act. Chairperson, I can respond that the FS codes are aligned to the DTI codes where this is concerned. We apply the continued principle as it is in the generic code. We do, however, have a special dispensation for dilution that are due to regulatory requirements. That is, the financial entities are forced by regulation to actually increase their capital adequacy, which will then lead into a dilution of their ownership. In that instance, the FSC does allow entities to continue recognizing the ownership as if there hasn't been dilution. But other than that, ownership, if there is dilution, financial entities have to talk. The other dispensation is that with a dilution, financial entities have an option to then top up either by doing another ownership deal or by financing black businesses and black industrials. However, for an entity to apply this, they must have done their first black ownership deal. And then we are also, as indicated, reviewing the financial sector code, and ownership is also one of those elements that is under review. There was also a recommendation to have the FSTC capacitated and also held accountable for its performance. We have implemented some of these recommendations in terms of capacitating the FFTC internally and also the council itself by seniorizing members who sit in the council, which are now leaders of the constituencies of the council. And we also, as part of strengthening the FFTC, as indicated, have some staff that we have appointed, but we also are having a challenge with funding, which limits how much we can do in terms of strengthening the council. We also are making sure that we also hold ourselves accountable for the performance of the sector for transformation by making sure that even our governance structures, we monitor their performance. We also monitor the performance of the individual members who sit on those governance structures. Some specific recommendations on elements in the code. On management control, we were requested to encourage financial entities to exceed the targets that are set in the sector code. We are still, the sector is still not meeting the targets. But as part of the review process, we have in our agenda to look at understanding what are the reasons the sector is unable to meet management control targets and what is it that we can do to unlock the barriers. We also had a recommendation on empowerment financing that we need to ensure that it does not allow for cherry picking of easiest sub-elements, and that there is focus on funding Black SMEs, rural and township entrepreneurs. In this instance, Chair, I can report that the Financial Sector Transformation Council has set specific targets for SME so that there can be specific focus for SME. But as we are also reviewing the sector code, we are also looking at the other sub-elements to make sure that it's not only SME funding that receives attention, but other sections such as transformational infrastructure, affordable housing, Black agriculture, they also receive funding. And on procurement and enterprise development, we are also aligning or trying to align as we're reviewing the code to make sure that we increase targets. The DTI had proposed targets of 50% by 2021. We are also looking at aligning to that. Asset management, we took note of what was said in the report that we need to ensure access to markets for Black asset managers. And as we're reviewing the code, we're also making sure that we are setting specific targets to ensure that Black asset managers also have access to markets. We did in the current code also put in some provisions for specifically for Black asset managers, but we acknowledge that it's not enough. We need to improve it in the next round of the code. And on the last two items, on the implementation of financial education that we need to give attention to financial literacy, and also we need to assist or strengthen the cooperatives subsector. We are giving that our attention as part of the review process. Chair, that is on the recommendations that were made by the committee, that's the progress. And then just to give a highlight of where we are in terms of the financial sector code, as I've indicated, we gazetted on the 1st of December 2017, and we are now working on our report, or the first report from that gazette. And just to give the House an overview of how the sector is performing, before I do that, I need to highlight that this report is not yet approved by the council. It's still in draft format. And as soon as it is approved, we are chair available to come and present it to the House. However, we'll just give a highlight of what has happened up to now in terms of that report. We had about 167 financial institutions responding to our request to report, and on assessment, about 50% of those that responded are having a BE contribution level of between 1 and 4. We also noted that the larger entities tend to score better in terms of performance on their targets compared to smaller entities. Larger entities have areas where they are meeting their targets and areas where they are not meeting their targets, whereas smaller entities tend to not meet almost all their targets. We are hoping that we will have the full report in next month, and we will come back and give the House the fuller report. And however, some of the highlights that come from this report on ownership, just waiting for the slide to catch up. Thank you. But on ownership, the sector is generally still below target. These measurements are based on how they score against their scorecards. So in 2015, the score was around 62%. There has been an increase. In 2018, their score is around 79% on ownership. And with management control also still below target, 2015 was 51%. There has been a 6% increase to 57% in 2018. With skills development also, there hasn't been any change. The score was 62% in 2015. It's still at 62% in 2018. For procurement enterprise and enterprise supply development, there has been a slight increase from 80% in 2015 to 85% in 2018. For SED, our socio-economic development and consumer education, still the sector is below target with a slight decline from 85% to 82% in 2018. And for empowerment financing, there has been a slight increase from 76% to 82%. And also on this element, we noted that even though the sector is still not meeting its target in terms of scoring, in terms of rent value of how much has been issued for finance, the sector has actually far exceeded their target, which is an indication that larger institutions are actually doing more financing and reaching their target, while smaller entities are probably struggling to meet their target. With access to financial services, there is a decline from 78% in 2015 to 58% in 2018. We have to acknowledge, Chair, that the decline is not in the banking industry, but in the insurance industry, where we still need to have proper or appropriate products for the target market, and also ensure that the target market know how to utilize these products and they are made accessible for them. Chair, that is an overview on the report, and if we move to the review of the financial sector code, which began in February 2019, there has been some work done. We did have to halt the process midway to assist both labor and organized community to capacitate their members who were participating in the subcommittee. And we have resumed the process in October 2019, and the subcommittees are at full force, and we expect to have the final draft by May 2020. From the review process, some of the key proposals that have been made include that currently, the retirement fund scorecard is voluntary and it's only for the top 100 entities. But going forward, we should have it compulsory and also for all financial retirement funds, regardless of their size. And another proposal is that we should, where possible, have the targets aligned to race and gender demographics, and not just have targets for blacks, but break them down into the race and gender demographics. Another recommendation that is coming strong is that we need to increase access to markets for black suppliers, and also ensure availability of funding for their businesses. And one other important thing is that we need to ensure that the suppliers are encouraged to supply locally produced goods in order to create employment. And also another emphasis that has been made through this review process is increasing support for black women-owned businesses, and also ensuring that going forward we don't measure transformation just in terms of monetary targets, but we also include job creation as one of the measures of transformation project. And lastly, one other recommendation that's coming strongly is that penalties should be imposed where there is failure to meet targets. That's the highlight on the review process. In conclusion, at the FSTC, we also believe that the summit must be held, and we will also work with the NEDLAC to assist in ensuring that the summit takes place. We also wish to place it before this House, the question of funding the FSTC, and to say that we do require our government to assist in funding the financial sector council as it is required by legislation. We are also aware of the complexities of the financial sector codes and the need for us to actually dissect them and simplify them so that they can be easily implemented. So as soon as we are also done with the review process, we'll also be looking at how do we simplify the codes so that they can be easily implemented. We are also undertaking to improve our stakeholder engagement. We are aware that our engagement has been mostly with financial entities and our participants, and we need to extend it to our communities so that they can also know what the financial sector codes are about and also what they mean to them or how they can benefit from them. We are improving continuously our governance and we remain accountable to society on transforming the financial sector. And we also want to increase participation by financial institutions, especially when we have to report performance. And we're going to put a couple of measures in place to make sure that the numbers that we have in 2018 are increased for the next coming year. And lastly, Chair, lastly, as the Financial Sector Transformation Council, we also have planned our own strategic plan in early 2020 to map a vision for our future. Thank you.
So feel welcome and teach us and learn us. Thanks very much. Let's move to BBBE Commission. If you are welcome. How's your time for presentation?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity. We'll start by just introducing ourselves quickly. My name is Wadwan Gili, the Commissioner for the BBBE Commission. My colleague here on my right is Ms. Busuyo Ngwenya, who is the Executive Manager for Compliance. And we also have Madam Thembala Dondashe, who is our Senior Manager responsible for most of the work that we'll be presenting in terms of the analysis and the steps that relate to BBBE compliance. Chair, we are a stakeholder in this process, particularly because we are the regulator for the BBBE legislation. If members would recall that the legislation relating to BBBE was passed in 2003, however, there wasn't any regulator to oversee the implementation. In 2013, this Parliament amended the legislation to introduce certain changes so that we can properly monitor the implementation and make sure that we're able to measure year in, year out, how we're doing as a country and be able to direct and be able to also confirm if the policies that have been put in place by this government are achieving the objectives for which they were intended to achieve. So, Chair, what we'll do today is just to give you a sense of how we are doing. But we're not going to cover all our mandate as articulated in the Act. We'll focus on three areas, and I will just indicate them now. I will hand over to Ms. Ngwenya when it comes to the, you know, how we're doing to take this through that by focusing on those three areas. Chair, the framework is such that there are general codes of good practice that are published by the Minister of Trade and Industry, which guide how the country should be measured to see whether we are really transforming economically. And those factors at the moment are five, which is ownership. So we must test ownership to see whether the productive assets of this country do actually rest with the majority of the people in this country. So the facilitation of ownership of the productive assets is important. So ownership is the first area that we measure. Then we measure management control. Then we go to, and in terms of management control, basically what we're looking at is whether the decisions in the structures of companies and government in this country are made by the people that reflect the demographics of the country. So representation is very important in terms of the decision-making process. That's where we test management control. And then we've got skills development that gets to be measured, where all measured entities are required to contribute 6% of their payroll towards developing skills of the people that are employed within their organization and people that are not employed. So that is where you see that a number of entities will be engaging and bringing in trainees that are not necessarily absorbed, but that they contribute towards skilling them for the market so that the market can find them at least ready to start working. The fourth element is enterprise and supply development. In this area, all measured entities, both in the private and the public sector, are required to contribute 3% of the net profit after tax to empower small businesses, new entrepreneurs, as well as existing entities that are flag-owned. So in terms of procurement, in terms of their supply chain, they need to transform their supply chain. So that happens, we measure them on an annual basis. The last one is the socio-economic development, which is a catch-all. Anything that an entity will do to facilitate the entry by a black person who was previously disadvantaged to access economic opportunities and participate in the mainstream economy. Those are the general codes, Chair. So as you would have heard, the financial sector code has added additional elements to that in terms of how they want to be measured, and there are different elements that have been included in that. And in terms of the regulatory mandate, our mandate as the Commission is therefore to oversee the implementation. So when a sector code, like in the financial sector, has been approved and gazetted by the Minister, it replaces the general code for that sector, which means every entity in that sector, operating in that sector, is going to be measured on the financial sector code. And this is the code today that we will be giving you a report on, based on the report that we received as the regulator, to then give you an indication of how they are doing based on the report that we are receiving. And I suppose then the committee will be able to also see whether the report that they presented and the report that the commission will present are aligned, and where there's no alignment, so that we can then see where are the discrepancies and coordinate the information better. So in the last committee sitting, one of the things that was emphasized by the committee was that they should be working together between the regulator as well as the council. And we have, as the commission, facilitated a workshop where we met with all of the sector councils, where we articulated what the mandates are, how we're going to work together. And I'm glad to report as well that we ended up having adopting a referral protocol, which will help to facilitate the working together between the financial sector council and the other councils in relation to the work with the work that the commission is overseeing. So that was one aspect that we were required to work on after the meeting. Chair, our mandate, as I indicated, we're going to focus on only the three areas. Our general mandate is to oversee the implementation. However, today we're going to just report to you in terms of the investigation, in terms of the complaint trends, what are we receiving, and how is the financial sector doing in the complaints that we are receiving. And we're also going to give you an indication of how, on an annual basis, their compliance reports indicate to us in terms of how they are doing. And then thirdly, we're going to then report to you in terms of the major BE transactions, which are ownership deals that are concluded by any entity in the market. If any ownership deal is concluded, which is a BE deal, if it's for the transaction value of 25 million, it must be reported to the commission. So the commission will receive it, and once the commission receives it, it will register it publicly. It will be available on our website, so you'll know that there is this thing that has been registered. We register it within 10 days. However, after registering it, our job is then to look at whether it complies with the ownership requirements that are in the legislation. So then we'll give the entities feedback on those areas where there might be non-alignment for them to correct it, and we'll give them an opportunity to correct that. Chair, I'm going to then head over to Ms. Ngwenya to just take you through that, and then we'll then just give you our conclusion so that we can just say what are the areas where we are concerned and where are the areas that we think we can cooperate and work better, I think, with the industry to move towards the targets. Noting that the targets in the financial sector code were not, you know, to our satisfaction as the regulator. We felt that at the time they had an opportunity to set higher standards to lead the market. They have an influence as the financial sector in a lot of markets. But we do now realize that there's a long way to go, but then that way can be accelerated by removing some of the challenges that might be there in the market for entities to achieve what needs to be achieved.
Thank you, Chair. I will just run through the slides in the interest of time. But we thought it's important to just show the difference between the generic code and the financial sector code. When you look at ownership, the generic says it's a 25+1, and the financial sector code is sitting at 23. Management control, generic is 19, management control under finance is 20. Skills development for both generic and finance is 20. Enterprise and supply development for generic is 42. And then for financial sector code is sitting at 15. Socioeconomic development code is 5, but then the financial sector code is also called something called empowerment financing. The target day is 25, and then they also have access to finance the target day is 12. Now, in terms of BBB legislation under compliance reporting, it requires that JSE listed companies must report to the commission. It also requires that sector council must report to the minister, and then will receive that report via the minister's office. And then also it requires the state itself to report on how they are doing in terms of implementing BBBE, and also the CTAS are also required to report. Now when you look at reporting, this one that you're reporting on now is the report that we've received from the JSE company. In 2017, we only received one report. In 2018, we received 25 reports. For this financial year, which is quarter one and quarter two, we have received 23. Now you see that the number has increased slightly for 2019-20. It's because we had an engagement with the GST, which has made triple P reporting mandatory, and they also wrote to all the entities that have not reported to require them to report. So as we think the movement beyond 2019 might be based on that as well. And then the sector countries itself, I think they've just mentioned that they've not reported, so we've not received a report from them since we started in 2016. And then under registered major triple P transactions for the period of 2017 to 31 March, 16 transactions that involve the financial sector were reported out of the 272 that we have seen. And then we've also attached a list of companies that reported, but you're not going to run through that. You can look at it in your own time. Now, the commissioner did mention that we do receive our complaints, but at times we also initiate on our own, based on whether we're watching monitoring or based on anonymous tip-offs. So from 2016 up until 1920, quarter two, we've received 286 complaints, and from the financial sector, 16 of those came from the financial sector. So even though the number is low, but I mean, one has to look at them, what were the issues that were arising. Some of the complaints that we mentioned here is initiation, where we have requested companies to align their transactions and they've not then done that. So we have referred those for then the investigation. With the highest leading being mining, that has had a number of complaints that have been received. Now, when you look at black ownership in terms of the compliance reports that you have received, the financial sector in 2016, black ownership was standing at 38%. In 2017, it dropped to 31.79%, and in 2018, it went as low as 21.64%. Now, we just need to remember that this is from the JSE, the said companies that reported to us. And then black women ownership from those companies, in 2016, it was standing at 9%. 2017, it moved to 9.99%. In 2018, it dropped to 7.62%. Management control, I would not look at, because what we have done is to also compare how they are faring when we look at the other sectors and also the generic. But we won't focus on the other sectors, we're just focusing on how the financial sector is done. Under management control, 2016, they were sitting at 57%. 2017, it was then 52.85%. 2018, it dropped to 51.50%. What you normally look at as well when you look at management control, we look at ownership. If a company says you are 51% like owned, but the management control says, let's say, 15%, then it tells us that that company, there are not like people owning that company. It's just owned on paper. But if the key decision making is not being done by black people, that means that they're possibly being funded just to get a higher level. And then under skills development, in 2016, they scored 54%. In 2017, it dropped to 43.83%. And in 2018, it went up again to 55%. And then under enterprise and supplier development, when you look at 2016 finance, they scored quite high. It was 92%. 2017, it dropped very low to 49.86%, which poses a question. From 92 to 44.49. And then in 2018, it went up again to 71.50%. Now, one a trend that has been coming through under ESG, we have been told that we should not look at it and be excited. Because what companies will do is that because they've been working with WSI for so long and they're comfortable with WSI, but the legislation requires that you must now appoint black people. So they will appoint WSI, but they'll make sure that WSI still gives the work to the white company. So when the tender goes out, WSI will be appointed, but the work would not be done by WSI, which is then seen as a fronting practice, something that we need to be looking at, because the numbers look like companies are doing well, but the reality is that they are fronting black people, so that's a concern that you need to deal with. Under socio-economic development, the financial sector scored 88% in 2016, 2017 it scored 77.75%, 2018, it got 59%. Now, with SED, what we have seen is that people would claim donations, school shoes, fixing your roof. That's not socioeconomic development, because socioeconomic development, I look at it as saying, teach a man how to fish, not give them a man a fish. Because it talks to you is sustainable economic participation, that black people, when you leave them, you're no longer able to donate those, whatever you're donating, they should be able to sustain themselves. So whatever intervention that companies are doing, and it doesn't lead to leave black people being economically active, then it's not achieving. And you find that most companies score a total 5, but really when you look at the interventions, it's more corporate social investment than achieving, which is something that you also need to be looking at. Now, when you look at issues of major supplementary transactions, as I mentioned, that we had received 272 for the period of June 2017 to 2018 March, the financial sector council, for the financial sector, it has 63 transactions registered. And when you look at then the value of those transactions, they were worth 15 billion. But the total value then of the 272 transactions that were registered was 188 billion. And one thing that you also need to mention is that most of these transactions were vendor financed. That means companies themselves financed these loans. And then the next most that financed these deals was the bank, with government financing less than 2% of these deals, which is something the members should also look at and ask, why do we have all these financing government financing institutions but not supporting black ownership transactions? Now, when you look at ownership in terms of to measure triple B transactions, black ownership was standing at 42%, black women ownership at 11.34%, and then black designated groups, which should include people with disabilities, military veterans, your youth, was standing at 5%, new entrants, 2%, voting rights that will let them sit with black people was 32%. Which doesn't talk to the ownership, because if you say ownership is 42% but the black voting rights is at 82%, that means in some companies there is no active participation by black people. And then black women voting rights were 9.41%. And then I'll hand over to the commissioner to conclude, Chair. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Just in conclusion, Chair, I think it is important to note that the role of the BBB Commission has assisted in a sense that now when somebody says there's a BEE deal, then we are able to tell you whether it's a real deal or not. And that is going to assist that we're not going to have deals that are announced and we cut ribbons and then 5 years down the line, there is no value in black hands. 10 years down the line, the shares revert to the original owners because black people were just warehousing them because of the financial restrictions and impositions that are placed on the loans that are extended for black people to finance this. So you find that black people will have warehouses for a 10-year period that would be required for a particular license awarded to that entity, and at the end of that, there's no transfer of ownership in black hands. So the role of the commission is particularly now important because we look at the quality, the impact of the transaction, but as well as the sustainability. And Chair, in terms of the there are questions at all times, people saying that there is no certainty around BBB. In respect of the financial sector, there is no area where there's uncertainty. The financial sector code is very clear in terms of what the targets are. Yes, they will be in the process of relooking it and to review that, but there is no question about what it is that is required. So there is certainty. And as the Commission, we are happy that there is certainty and everybody knows what needs to be complied with. And thirdly, Chair, it is important also to emphasize that other people are saying that BBBE is not mandatory. BBBE is a policy of this country. There is a legislation towards it. And for every entity in this country that does business with government, that receives a license from government, is mandatory for it to implement BBBE. Section 10 of the Act was amended, particularly in 2013, to make it mandatory. So now, if any entity is doing business with government and is not compliant to the codes that have been set, whether in the financial sector or whether it's in the general codes,
then that business should not be doing, that entity should not be doing business with government. So what we've increasingly seen is that government will continue to do business with an entity that is not transformed. And that's where we are talking to when we refer to the reports from government as well, but also where we investigate entities of government for awarding contracts to entities that do not comply with the legislation, because that's in violation. Section 10 is very clear. Chair, I just want to also conclude by indicating that in respect of the financial sector specifically, we would implore them to ensure that they submit their report to the Minister of Trade and Industry as required, because at the moment as we speak to you, they are in breach because we have not received their report. Because we supposed, as a regulator, we're supposed to receive their report from the Minister, and at the moment they have not been able to submit that. The second thing is that there is an increase, at least now, that we are seeing in the reports that we are receiving from the JSE listed companies, but it is the responsibility of the Council to make sure that the embedded entities in their sector report to them, so that they can consolidate that information and submit it to the Minister. And in terms of the concerns, we are really concerned about the regression in terms of ownership, in terms of management control. These are the issues that we raised in 2017 when we came to this committee, that we think that the targets are not were not strong enough at the time, and they were not targeting where the concerns are. Chair, the last one is the issue around empowerment finance. We think that there's an opportunity for the financial sector to go back, especially the Council, to go and reflect in terms of how they can really support in terms of extending finance to black entrepreneurs for them to be able to acquire assets. And that financing is not having severe restrictions on them in exercising the control that they need to exercise as owners. So we need to make sure that those deals do not become fictitious deals where it's just a front for and then giving the impression that there's black ownership when there isn't. But there's a big opportunity for them to actually extend finance. As we've indicated, at the moment it's only 19% of the 272 deals that were funded by the banks themselves directly. The majority is vendor finance, so it's financed by the entities themselves. Chair, we'll conclude with that, and again, thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to engage on this.
Okay, thanks very much, Dr. B. The last presentation is South African Reserve Bank.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you this morning. My name is Unathi Kamlana. I'm head of policy in the Prudential Authority of the South African Reserve Bank. I am with a colleague of mine, Khalil Naidu, who is a senior policy analyst in the same department. Able to spend a little bit of time just talking about the legal construct of the Prudential Authority. I know we are aligned on the program as coming from the Reserve Bank. We come from the Prudential arm of Twin Peaks, which is located in the South. So we'll talk now about what the difference is in terms of our focus and mandate, because there's a few important bits of the responsibilities of the South which are outside the purview of the Prudential Authority. In terms of our mandate, there's really four pillars that the Financial Sector Regulation Act prescribes in terms of our areas of focus as our mandate. The first is institutional soundness of financial institutions, and financial institutions are defined to include banks, mutual banks, cooperative banks, cooperative financial institutions, insurers. And in addition to that institutional soundness mandate, we also are responsible for financial market infrastructures, and those are defined in the Financial Markets Act as securities and derivative financial market infrastructures. So those are the two categories of institutions. And importantly, FISRA also outlines that what we do for the institutional soundness and safety mandate is to be in the interest of financial customers. So we don't do prudential supervision for the sake of the institutions themselves, but we are focused on how it impacts financial customers. And importantly, right towards the end of those four pillars, is that we have a responsibility to contribute to financial stability outcomes. And I think it's quite important that we do that given the nature, the concentrated nature of the South African financial system. So that's really the a summary of the mandate of the prudential authority. We are located in the South, but we are an independent regulator with specified responsibilities and mandate in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. We'll talk later, Chair, about the fact that for the first time, the Financial Sector Regulation Act also lists transformation of the sector specifically as an object of that act, and therefore places a particular responsibility for Twin Peaks regulators to make a contribution, and will make a presentation on what we see as our contribution in terms of that, and how we are thinking from a supervisory point of view to actually effect that contribution. Just briefly, I won't spend a lot of time on this slide, which just outlines the governance structure of the Prudential Authority. This is also a description of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. We report to the Prudential Committee. The Prudential Committee is chaired by the Governor of the SARB. The Deputy Governors of the SARB are members of the Prudential Committee. And the four heads which are outlined there are management of the Prudential Authority with accountability, especially for regulatory framework and coordination to the Prudential Committee. But we are independent for supervisory decisions and licensing. Those responsibilities are direct responsibilities of management and are not decisions of the Prudential Committee of the Governor. To spend a bit of time, Chair, I'm running through this because of time, just to talk about our regulatory strategy. So the Financial Sector Regulation Act prescribes that within 6 months of establishment of the two Twin Peaks regulators, that we publish a regulatory strategy. We have a responsibility to also review that strategy annually and to publish any amendment thereto. Having been established on the 1st of April 2018 as the Prudential Authority together with our sister regulator, the FSCA, we did meet the requirements of the Act to publish a strategy. And there are five elements of that strategy. The first talks to our approach to regulation, and perhaps give effect, especially to consultation, which is one of the important changes in terms of how we develop and implement the regulatory framework. Also, the Financial Sector Regulation Act is quite prescriptive about our approach to supervision, which it requires that it be risk-based and proportional, forward-looking, outcome-focused, and integrated. And I think the emphasis on integration talks to the fact that we were taking over institutions from two other regulators, so the former FSB and CPDA, and those institutions were subjected to differing regulatory frameworks, differing approaches to supervision, and as the Prudential Authority, we need to have an integrated approach to them. But also, it talks to supervisory frameworks that we have to develop for each industry that we are responsible for, so banks, insurers, financial infrastructure, as I have indicated before. But additionally, the Financial Sector Regulation Act recognizes the concentrated nature of our financial system, and especially the dominance of the bank assurance model, and because of that, it has a particular emphasis on financial conglomerates. We're doing a lot of work to develop a framework that talks to that, and also significant owners of financial institutions whose behavior we've seen in many resolution strategies, the behavior of significant owners is actually relevant for prudential outcomes and even for stability. And then we have a list of 6 areas of focus, including strengthening regulation for banks, for financial conglomerates, which I've just mentioned, market infrastructures as well, rolling out the Insurance Act, which is the first post-Twin Peaks sectoral law, and the introduction of solvency assessment and management, of SAM for short. And then also significant owners which I've spoken to, and importantly because Twin Peaks has a big focus and emphasis on regulatory cooperation and coordination, and we are required to conclude MOUs with the other peak, the FSCA, but also the National Credit Regulator, the FIC, the Reserve Bank in terms of its financial stability mandate, and all of those were concluded in our first year of existence. Importantly, we also have outlined additional priorities from a strategic point of view, and transformation of the financial sector is one of those. Sustainable competition is one of those. We have a contributory role that the Act also gives us, but also importantly, we have a role that we have to support financial inclusion outcomes and the development of fintech in the financial sector. We thought it also just include an updated list of the number of entities. We did have this list last time in the previous hearing, Chair. A lot of the different entities, the number of the different entities that are within our purview. I won't spend a bit of time on this, just to say we have got 34 banks, if you include local branches of foreign institutions, 4 mutual banks, with one recently being licensed, 26 cooperative sector institutions, including Co-op banks and CFI, and then the rest, as you see, in the insurance sector, including reinsurance. The total number where we are right now of 234 entities and growing, because we do have some interest in terms of the licensing application that we have in the pipeline. I thought I'll just include this slide because we did have this conversation the last time we were at these hearings. Just the relevance of the market structure, both for competition outcomes, but also for transformation. And I think there was a specific question which was asked about, so what is it that we do as a SAB or the PA to deal with the concentration in the financial sector? We spent a bit of time at that point explaining the evolution of the market structure, especially in banking, the currency crisis that we had in the early 2000s, the exit of about 22 banking institutions at that time, what that actually meant for concentration in the sector, but also importantly some of the empirical work which has been done, which talks to what are the competition outcomes given the concentrated nature of those firms. All of those are historical facts, but I think our focus is then from an institutional soundness point of view, what do we have in place, and this is what we've listed here. So we have additional, what we refer to as higher loss absorbing capital requirements on large firms. And these additional capital requirements are designed to really internalize the cost of systemicness, or the cost of being a large institution whose failure and negative behavior has got negative externalities for the financial sector and obviously for the economy. So that's what we're talking to there, and I'd be happy to take questions and a bit more discussion on that if there is interest later. Also, in terms of just the breakdown sort of size of the different industries within the financial sector that we are responsible for, this information is also contained in our annual report, so I won't spend too much time there. Mutual banks, at the end of March 2019, 3 billion rand in assets, and the entire cooperative bank and CFI sector totaling 369 million in assets. And just to talk about some of the work we're doing from a prudential point of view to update the rules that apply to CFIs, and we're quite sensitive in doing this in a responsible way that takes into account the nature of those firms, the capacity constraints that are faced by those firms, and them being sort of new in within the culture of prudential supervision that the prudential authority has been applying to the larger institutions. But also on the mutual banks front, given the recent failures and challenges that we've had there, there are lessons which point to the need to update our regulatory framework, and we're doing that work to prevent similar occurrences in the future in that space. And a little bit later, we'll talk also about work that we have underway to deal with barriers to entry and potentially a much more tiered system of deposit taking institutions in South Africa. We're working with, obviously, the National Treasury to get that right. On the insurance sector, also this is publicly available information to Chilean in assets. This is also at the end of March for the life sector and for the non-life 197 billion in assets. Composite reinsurance, we've also indicated 34 billion, and these are the number that we could get a hold of at the end of December 2018. As I've mentioned before, we are also responsible, and this is one of the newest additions, I think, to the scope of the prudential regulator in South Africa, which is securities and derivative market infrastructures, and we've listed them in the different categories there. Exchanges, we've got five as listed for now, and central securities depositories, we've got trade and Dryland as being our license, CSD, and we've got trade and debt here as clearing houses in terms of our scope. So I'm going to hand over now to Khaled to talk us through the Financial Sector Regulation Act and what it says to us about transformation, and then we'll talk again about specifically what is our focus in terms of the plans we have to roll out our approach and strategy with regards to transformation.
Thank you, Chair. As Mr. Kamlana has stated before, the Insurance Act was the first piece of financial sector law that was promulgated post the Twin Peaks of Financial Sector Regulation Act. And this law specifically deals with transformation of the financial sector. But just to go, the Financial Sector Regulation Act was promulgated on the 22nd of August 2017, and it gave effect to the Twin Peaks model, the prudential regulator being prudential authority and the conduct regulator being the financial sector conduct authority. And the Act was also very important in the fact that it formalized the financial stability mandate of the South African Reserve Bank as well. So one of the key objectives of the Act was to ensure that there's financial stability, that there's safety and soundness of financial institutions, and the fair treatment and protection of financial customers. So going beyond that, it looked at the efficiency and integrity of the financial system, the prevention of financial crime, financial inclusion, transformation of the financial sector, and confidence in the financial sector. And it's with that recognition that we cannot get safety and soundness in the financial sector without having these critical areas addressed by the Financial Sector Regulation Act. But the Act is very clear also in stating that where we're looking at seeking to achieve the objective of this Act, that the Reserve Bank and the financial sector regulators must not be constrained from achieving their objectives and their responsibility as set out in the Financial Sector Regulation Act. So the key objectives of the Prudential Authority, as Mr. Kamlana has alluded to, has been to enhance the safety and soundness of the financial institutions, of financial market infrastructure, to ensure that we protect financial customers against the risk of the financial institutions failing to meet their obligations, as well as to assist the sovereign in maintaining financial stability. So those are the mandates of the Prudential Authority. So the question that will then be asked is what exactly is the role of the prudential regulator in looking at transformation? And when we're looking at it, we have a direct role to play in licensing. So as you enter into the sector, we will look at what are your transformation objectives as an institution that wants to play in the financial sector. And as Mr. Moriarty said, banks and insurers are very special entities because they're actually dealing with the funds that are not actually their own funds, but the funds of members of the public. So when we're licensing a financial institution, we want to be very aware of what their objectives are and what their transformation plans will be. Now, this is very specific and written into law in the Insurance Act, but we will look at the development of the financial institution. So once you're licensed, we look at how you develop as an institution, and how you will ensure your safety and soundness. We'll also look at financial sector data. So a huge part of supervision is actually looking at the data that these financial institutions can provide to the regulator. And looking at the Insurance Act, we will actually look at transformation data. We will look at types of products that offered to the consumers. Now, as we said previously, we have a function to look at financial inclusion. So we will look from a supervision perspective at the type of products that are being provided, but that is done very much in conjunction with our conduct twin. We're looking at compliance, so when we have a whole array of legislation that financial institutions are required to comply with, from a supervision perspective, we will ensure that there's compliance. And the Financial Sector Regulation Act provides the Prudential Authority with an arsenal of tools that it will be able to use when we find that there's non-compliance with financial sector legislation. And then we also have to deal with resolution, and we will ensure that there's a very ordered resolution, an ordered exit from the sector, that resolution is done in an orderly manner. Now, the role of the Prudential Regulator will only be within respect to its legislative mandate. So from a licensing perspective, we need to look at reducing barriers to entry. Specifically with regard to transformation, we're looking at, from an insurance perspective, and we will roll this out to other financial institutions, if you look at their transformation plan when they submit that same for licensing, that where an institution comes in with the transformation agenda, that we will allow for progressive realization of their prudential requirements. So we'll actually allow you, based on a transformation agenda, to progressively realize whatever prudential requirements that you need to meet. And from a supervision perspective, that we will actually change a very proportional look at proportional supervision. So depending on the nature, scale, and complexity of your business, we will supervise you accordingly. If you look at our role, so we're looking at reducing barriers to entry based on simple business models and strengthening tiered financial systems. And we will not compromise on the safety and soundness of those financial institutions in terms of our checks and balances. We're looking at more entrance into the financial sector, look at increased competition, proportional supervision, and to encourage fintech in provision of financial products. The Prudential Authority and government and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority is actually working in an intergovernmental fintech working group, which actually looks at giving a platform for these types of fintech development. If you look at the way forward, in terms of the role that the Prudential Regulator will play, is that we're integrating regulatory and supervisory processes to incorporate transformation. It's to strengthen the corporate and financial institutions, mutual banks, and cooperative banks framework to ensure proportional supervision and attainable entrance into the sector, to cooperate and collaborate with the other regulators as they are presented here today on transformation agendas, and to engage with the National Treasury on a tiered banking approach. So it allows different types of business models to actually then engage in a deposit-taking institution under a different framework that's between the mutual banks and the commercial banks framework that we currently have. And thank you, Chair. That is what we have to say today.
Okay. That's thanks. Thanks very much to all the presenters. Now the opportunity for members to engage the presentations through clarity seeking questions and comments. Let me first note members who are going to engage with the presentation. Honorable Malvidez, Honorable Abrams, Honorable Dr. George, Honorable Scott Vernon, Dr. Rosen, Raja, Okay, let's start for now. We'll have a second round if members who want to make follow-ups. Let's start with Honorable Mavilan.
Thank you, Chair. I think the big question today as I'm sitting here is, what is transformation? And when I heard this and when we were busy presenting, I could just imagine how all of us that are here and sitting now, we've got one mandate. When you were presenting, you were overemphasizing your mandate. I could hear each one of you say our main mandate, our main. But I think there is only one mandate: the people of South Africa and the economy. That's why we are here. And that is the thing that we want to hear. What is it that you are doing for the economy and for the people of South Africa? And I hear that all of you, more or less, are saying you support black suppliers, you want to support women, big businesses, new businesses. The truth to the matter is, if they do not have financial access, nothing is going to happen. I happen to know of cooperatives. They will come together and group together, and they will just get an opportunity to have a business. You know, if one of them in that cooperative is registered in the credit bureau, all of them get penalized. I would just imagine when you present here, you would say, you know, there was a group of women who had formed a cooperative and they couldn't have access to funding, but we have helped them in this way. What you are telling, let's say me, I mean, I'm not going to write a dissertation about the numbers going up and down. That is what I want to know. What is transformation? What have you done to help them, you know, to access funding? You know why they go to, fronting? It's because they couldn't get money. And they resort to what the people that we all know in South Africa have got access to funding. That is the bottom line. So help them to get funding. Just go to the credit bureau and say, you know, credit bureau, this youth, he just went to the shop and bought some maybe jeans, and he owns 100 rand for 3 months. Then boom, he's on credit bureau. It's hurting. And you know, never the FSTC award. You know, there were recommendations made by SCOF and PCTI 2017, I think, if I'm not wrong. You waited for 2017, 2018, and 2019. You know, there's a big thing that is happening in that company. What is it? FSTC, reviewing. You are reviewing everything. And I mean, if you say, we are reviewing, you are reforming me, it doesn't tell me anything. We want results here. When are we going to finish reviewing? If from 2017 until now it's 2019 and you are reviewing, and you're talking about name and shame, why don't we name and shame? Because, you know, things are happening now. Things are ongoing and happening now. We want to see that list. You are busy reviewing. Process of introducing performance assets, reviewing course of procurement to align the targets. And everything here is reviewing. Financial education also under review. Financial education, you just go there and, I mean, it's there. We all know what is said to be done, but under review, honestly. Let us just think about the country, the people, and everybody in the country, and let us just try and do the right thing. That's what I can say. It is a comment. I don't know if maybe perhaps I have answers, but the bottom line is financial access has to happen. And if we want to empower our people there, we really have to see at the reasons, why is it that they do not get financial access? Number one, that I know, credit bureau, came at that. Review that.
I thought you were taking a break to drink water and come back with more energy. Okay.
thank the presenter. And maybe starting with national treasury, we need to get to a point where we get to that financial sector summit. Everybody seems to be crying about it. We, as a committee, are also crying about it. We need to get to a point where we all get together, sit in one place, talk the language of transformation in a progressive manner, where we obviously have a common goal, so that nobody is asking who is not doing what. We all collectively accelerate the transformation that Honorable Mbilete is also crying about. The FSTC talks to the issue of the fronting, basically, where one sits and wonders whether we are aware how the economic growth and specifically transformation that we're talking about is really suppressed by the act of fronting. And really somebody is not doing what they are supposed to do in terms of, one, picking up the anomaly when it happens. Because for me, if a company is called Unati, then Unati is the one who is supposed to get the lion's share. When it gets to somebody else and Unati gets 2%, what becomes our role as the financial sector when that happens? Now, the FSTC is talking to issue of targets that are still not met, for example, by the financial sector. And the question is, why do we get a message that says we're still looking at reasons why? When are we getting to the point of solutions? Because we can never get to the point of solution if we're still looking for the reason why targets are not met. Can we be clarified and be taken into confidence on a variety of issues, including the issue of financial education? What is your contribution at that level? Because for us to be able to deal with issues of transformation, we need to nip the bud at education level. So if there's nothing or little that we do in as far as that is concerned, it means there will be little or no progress. Now, I think I like the reporting of the commissioner, the truly commissioner. And it ends with, in the conclusion, it ends with some kind of conclusion remarks. And for me, the two best bullet points need to be answered in this meeting as to the failure to submit the annual report and the financial regression. I think we need to talk to those issues now, here and now. Against the Section 10G of the TRBE Act, the TRBE Commissioner reports a decline in reporting in terms of the entities that are listed there. My question is, do we have a decline in the actual entities? And as you list the decline in entities, you say, for example, I cannot find the page now, but you would put a figure and say 15, and
25, and then it goes down to 13, something like that. And I'm asking myself a question. It's 25 against what? 13 against what? Why do we seem to be declining when the report does not seem to be complaining, but there's a decline in the reporting by the entities. I hope you get my question, because I can't find the slide right now. My last two concerns are concerns that I think we raised it with the Reserve Bank when we made our committee visit to their headquarters. When we talked about the issue of the transactions that go through people's banks, like your 99 rand fraudulent transmissions, and we are still looking for answers in terms of how this is allowed and how these charges can, because when you reverse them, you are charged. And how does this happen when in fact you never authorized the transaction in the first place? Now we need to get to a point where we can securely say, no, it's no longer happening. When are we at any point going to reach that stage, or is it something that we just need to give up on and people continue? Because 99 rand can be minor to one person, but it is a lot of money to the public out there that we represent in this parliament. So we really need to get some answers on this. Lastly, there was a case of Old Mutual, where I think people who are into social media will remember this. I heard it from my daughter. You know, the story about a family that had to take the body, the corpse, to Old Mutual offices because of the kinds of responses that they were getting from Old Mutual, and they were not able to bury their insured family member. And it was only when they did that, when the claim that was due to them was paid to them. So now FSA has to tell us what it is that has been done, or in fact, taking it further to say, prevention of such occurrences must be shared with this committee, so that we can also lay our fears to rest as to convince people that it is still correct to trust these companies, because Old Mutual is quite a big company, and by now people trust Old Mutual. But if Old Mutual does that, which other smaller companies will do the same? What is it that we are doing as FSCA to ensure that people do not get into that kind of embarrassment? Because we're not talking here about people who were not, who didn't qualify. We talk of people who did qualify, and when they acted drastically, it's only then that the company considered and a payment was made to the family. So we really need, there's a lot that we need to do to ensure transformation. And people, South African people, are looking upon us for solutions. So whatever they have, it needs to be used by them. We cannot allow entities to steal from people all the time. Thank you, Chair. I was waiting for you to come in.
Thank you. You know, I've been given just 10 minutes. You know, at least I might just call the next honorable before I end over. Honorable, just continue, please.
Thank you very much. This is for the National Treasury. You mentioned that transformation initiatives have not been successful because they only benefited a few. This is so because the behavioral financial model on which transformation in its current form is built is fundamentally flawed and will never work to benefit the masses. Only a few will ever benefit from this failed model. Hasn't the time come for us to focus on accelerating economic growth and stimulating job-creating transformation instead of making a small elite group richer and richer? How do you distinguish between previously disadvantaged people who need support and those who are now so extremely rich that they don't need any support at all? What is the status of retirement funds? The vast majority of fund members are black and are members of their and are owners of their pension assets. Why is this not being measured? And then finally, BEE is a massive intervention in the economy, and our economy isn't growing. Do we have any idea what the opportunity cost in terms of economic growth has been that this intervention has brought? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Honourable Scotland.
No, thanks, Honourable Chair. I will welcome all the presentations. To the FSTC, my observation is that you are doing some work as per your report. However, you are struggling to meet most of your targets, especially as per slide 13 and slide 14. It shows that you are unable to meet most of your targets, and that is a matter of serious concern to us as members of this standing committee. Secondly, I think you are also talking about, I think it's like in slide 5, but the financial sector code, it empowers you to name and shame entities would not comply with the reporting provisions of the financial sector code. So I just want to know whether are there any entities that have been named and shamed by yourself in this regard. Number 3, on slide 7, on the empowerment financing element, I think you are saying that the discussions are underway in the review process to better structure empowerment financing targets. So if you can take us into confidence, what are these reviews entail, perhaps? And lastly, I see throughout the document where you spoke about, where you talk about, I think small businesses, you refer them as SME, not with the usual acronym, which is SMME. So why are you using a new acronym of SME? Then coming to the BEE Commission, you are saying you are maintaining a register of measures, BEE transaction of 25 million and above threshold. So I want to know as to what about the other transactions that are below 25 million rands? How do you monitor them in terms of compliance and so forth? And number 2, you spoke of the issue of fronting. My question is, how rife are cases of fronting? And in the event that you found such cases, what are the penalties for those entities who are just fronting for the purpose of being seen as compliant, whereas they are not actually compliant. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ms. Goldman. Dr. Ndoh.
No, you know, the financial sector is true South Africa. It's real South Africa. And that's where you see that we have to stop living a lie, all of us. Because there's no transformation actually taking place at all. White people are in charge. And it's essentially an anti-black sector. If these are not the attitudes from the beginning, it's racism, basically. I mean, you all spoke, said racial inequality. Nobody names the beast. But a young black person who goes to a bank to request help with financing of their business, particularly when they're an African woman, they face all types of stereotypes, even from other blacks. If you are black, you are probably incompetent. If you are black, you are probably stealing, corrupt, and you know you must be given a chance, not an opportunity, a little bit of a chance, under very strict conditions. And that's a country we must live in. We must call a country, we must call a home this place, where majority of the people who live here are subjected to such race. There is too much racism in the financial sector. That's what it's called, anti-black racism. So we know the examples they are abound. And I think that these cosmetic things you are busy with are not going to change the situation. 23 years, 25 years into democracy, depending on the market and the good-heartedness of racists to change themselves is not going to help the situation. I think there has to be a fundamental shift in attitude in that sense. White people are not going to give us the wealth. It's not going to happen. They are not built and socialized that way. What happens to them? They don't even know that they are racist. How can they not be racist? Everybody who is black in their lives is a servant. So one day you pitch there, you are wearing, you are just black suit wearing servant. But we are meant to serve them. It's very difficult to ask such people who live under those conditions to lead transformation. To ask from them to transform a bank, an insurance company, or asset management institutions. So I think that we have to have a fundamental change in attitude of trying to beg white people to transform themselves or to transform these institutions. They're not going to do it. They've not been interested in the last 25 years. That is a fact. So that's a different way of putting the point that transformation is not working in the financial sector, and the simple reason is racism. So, for instance, you say you want to name and shame, and then what? If you find a company that is not compliant with the transformation prerogatives, you name and shame them, and then what? There's no punishment. There's nothing they lose. But they are also so organized, they're so powerful that you actually can't punish them, in a sense. So maybe you can give me an example, Treasury or FSTC or anyone, of a situation where there was real consequences for non-compliance. that a big company like Old Mutual or a bank like Standard Bank was punished heavily for not complying with the transformation objective. And that would be great if you could provide such an example. I doubt there is. Some of these, particularly insurance companies, they are in events of the 1990s. Some of them, it's 1990s coming this way. And they've developed, they've become substantial, and they're still white. So I'm not talking 1857 or 1957. We're speaking about some of these companies are companies of the last 25 years. So if you want proof that these people are not interested in transforming anything, look at all the institutions of the last 25 years. They are not interested in being transformed. So you need mechanisms that have punishment. That's one way you punish them. They have to lose something. So you've got to legislate these punishments. Otherwise, we're working. I don't believe white people want to transform, as it were. Okay, the other interest for me are the implications of the fourth industrial revolution to this question of, in fact, the entire financial sector, the way in which finance is changing or is going to be transformed by artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and the implications of that for transformation. Let me pose it as a question. What do you guys have to say in relation to that? So, my final comment relates to, so there are these implications that you can put into the legislation or into the system to punish companies for not complying with transformation objectives. But on the other side is to completely build new institutions. Is to do black consciousness, basically. To build new institutions. That may be, have to start with actually a state-owned bank, which redirects finance. A state-owned bank, and which must be black-controlled, where black people are not discriminated on the basis of the color of their skin. A bank that is willing to waste money on black people. That is willing to give them money to go and experiment, like white people get experimentation money for businesses in South Africa. They get lots of funding just to experiment. Their businesses last for 5 years, they lose everything. After 2 years, they come back, they get money. Small businesses in the white community, they get lots of funding. Because the banks are there. So you need a state-owned bank, black-controlled, with a mandate, a pure Pan-Africanist mandate. One brilliant young entrepreneurs, we're going to finance them. We know 60% of the time we're going to lose that money, but at least 40% it will be successful.
Wait a minute. Hello, madam. We don't take videos. You are not allowed to. I see you are video recording, Dr. I don't know why you do that. You should not do it.
Thanks. So we've got to build alternative institutions for ourselves, which must be state-supported and supported by state institutions. I cannot stop repeating this. Stop asking white people to transform the economy, to transform themselves. Majority of these institutions, particularly insurance companies, some of the asset managers are managing pension funds of black people. We've got some financial muscle. You've got to start alternative institutions that have alternative foundations based on a non-racial agenda, but completely black-favoring. without any apology, it's not even against the constitution, is correcting the injustices of the past. But also you've got evidence that in the last 25 years, white people are not interested. Now, the most important message I want you to leave here with is to know why people are not interested in transforming themselves, in transforming the institutions. So I think alternative financial institutions may be the actual route that we have to take. We have to actively build, starting with a state-owned bank, then go to the insurance space, go to the asset management space, and build alternative state-supported and all supported by state institutions or other state institutions. Otherwise, just forget it. So that I think might be the progressive way forward. So legislative changes, the National Credit Act, for an example, I think there has to be some form of an initiative to make it much more difficult for people to lose their homes, for an example. Extending a time that you are given 12 months, I mean, that's a basic thing, a home or a house. We've got to make some changes because these are some of the legislations that are used to perpetuate, and in most of the cases they punish black people in any way for the same reasons of racism within these banks. But you might want to also quickly think about the implications of the inevitable amendment of the constitution to allow expropriation of land without compensation. How that is going to affect the bond and stock market. Because the land now is no longer for sale. That's going to happen. We'll have to think seriously about the implications of that. And then the final one is the Insolvency Act. The way it's so easy to sequestrate people within it, I think that we might want to think seriously about that. So, in summary, number one, I think give up on white people. Two, let's think about alternative institutions that are biased to black people. And then three, what are the implications of the fourth industrial revolution? Artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, the fact that everybody operates a mobile cell phone today. What are the implications of the fourth industrial revolution in thinking about the financial sector and transformation in particular? Maybe we have an opportunity there to undermine some of the racism if all the person sees is just an algorithm or an ad. Maybe if they don't see our skins, they might think differently. Unfortunately, you still have a Nonkia Kiambo as a name, which sends you out. But I don't know, we can even think about different ways of building people's identities into these mobile technologies that are already taking the world by storm, particularly in the first world or in the developed countries. We want to think about that seriously, and then it's these legislative changes. Otherwise, me, Chairperson, and I think that will be my contribution.
Okay, thank you, Tango. Can presenters respond? We'll start.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to some of the questions and also request some of our council members to also assist in some of the responses. I think the first thing that I need to clarify is the issue of the review process. It seems to have come out as sounding like in the FFTC we're doing nothing else but just reviewing and reviewing. Like to just explain that the sector codes were gazetted in December 2017. So for the whole of 2018, we were implementing, it was our first year of implementing those sector codes, which is the report we are currently compiling and we expect to publish soon.
So over and above implementing for the first year, we then at the beginning of this year started with the review of those codes. But we needed to give those codes a chance to implement them so that when we review and before we finalize the review, we have an understanding of how far we have traveled on those codes, which is why it's only now that we are actually now looking at how do we address some of those recommendations that came out of the 2017 report, because it's only now that we have started to review. But we have been implementing what we had that we actually gazetted in December 2017 for the whole of 2018. And we have indicated that our deadline to finish the review process is May 2020. We have to have completed the work and gazetted another sector code. And also, Chair, just to highlight also the process of reviewing a sector code is also quite a lengthy process because it also involves different stakeholders. We have like 8 subcommittees that are looking at each element of the sector code to see whether the code or the element addresses the needs of South Africans, what is it that we can do, and also just to make sure that we don't put numbers that we will then have to come back and defend why we are unable to put those numbers. So there is a lot of research that needs to go along with reviewing the code, and there's also a lot of negotiation amongst the stakeholders to agree on those targets and the codes that we're going to put on the code. Chair, also on the issue of financial education, as I've indicated, we have been implementing. So we are not, we are running consumer education as part of our code. We are measuring entities on how they are performing on consumer education. Yes, access to finance is a big issue, especially for Black South African businesses. It's been acknowledged that there is a shortage of funding for small, medium, and micro enterprises. So that, Chair, is also receiving attention. As we have indicated, we have set a specific target where we say at least the minimum of so much of funding by the sector must go to the funding of small and medium enterprises. However, we do not think that it is enough, which is why we are also, as we are reviewing the sector code, considering what is it that we are going to do as our next level in order to improve funding to Black businesses. Yes, the sector is also still not meeting targets, as we have seen in the report, both the report of the FFTC and also the report of the Commissioner indicate that the sector is falling below on their targets, and it is a concern for all of us, and it is one of the things that we as a council talk about, and it's also one of the reasons why there is recommendation from some of the constituencies to say let's have penalties for non-compliance so that we can push the idea of transformation as just being a voluntary thing, but to also just make it compulsory. We believe that if we can have penalties for non-compliance, there could be some traction in terms of transformation. But there's also a lot that we as the FFTC can also do to ensure that we actually mobilize, we lobby, we make sure that financial institutions understand the reason why they have to be transforming, and also we support them to make sure that they actually perform or they meet their targets. So it is a two-way street. It's the financial entities that need to transform, and it is us as the FFTC that also need to make sure that we assist them to actually transform or to meet their targets. Chair, in terms of the regression on the performance of the sector, yes, there has been a regression in certain areas, And we also note that the change in legislation also tends to lead to regression. There was a break between the previous sector code and the current one that was gazetted in 2017. And during that break, there is a creation of uncertainty wherein financial institutions, then some of them actually stop making plans to comply because they are anticipating a change in legislation. And therefore, when you implement the new legislation, you find that there's now a gap or there is a regression. We are hoping that by keeping them abreast of what we are doing on the current sector code, it will also assist them not to actually now start saying there's a new code that's going to come. We therefore don't have to do anything on this one. And we're also hoping that by making sure that we police them in terms of implementing and submitting their reports, we can then ensure that there is a movement upwards instead of the decline. One of the things we are looking at as part of the review process, as I've indicated, the current code allows pension funds to have a voluntary scorecard. We are looking at having a compulsory scorecard for them. And one of the things that we'll be looking at is that even that scorecard, we need to start measuring the ownership of pension funds. As it is indicated that the pension funds are actually owned by the members, but there are no reports that indicate what is the status of the ownership of those pension funds. So this is one of the things that has come out strongly in the recommendations as we are reviewing, that we need to look at that going forward. On the issue of naming and shaming, yes, the codes do allow us to name and shame, and the codes that allow us this are the new codes that we are just releasing the first report on them. So there will be naming and shaming of those that did not report. Chair, I have to emphasize that the codes allow us to name and shame for not submitting reports to the council and not for failing to meet targets. So failing to meet targets is something that we need to look at in the next code to make sure that it's also put in there. But the current code, name and shame only those that do not report to us. And then on the empowerment financing targets that we are looking at restructuring them, there is a challenge. Empowerment financing targets or empowerment financing has got four subcomponents. It looks at financing for affordable housing. It looks at financing for transformational infrastructure or financing of infrastructure in underdeveloped areas. It also looks at financing of black agriculture. And lastly, it looks at financing of black businesses, both large and small. So the current codes do not have specific targets for each sub-area. So if an entity has 100 million of empowerment financing, they can choose to spend all of that on affordable housing and nothing on financing of small businesses or of black businesses. So as we are reviewing the codes, we are also now looking at we need to restructure, because we have also noted the trend that there is the financing is also biased towards certain sub-elements. So we are now looking at we need to put minimum targets for the other elements so that it is not biased against infrastructure or biased against affordable housing, but it is spread equally according to the needs of funding in the country. And I apologize for using SME instead of SMMEs. It's not a new acronym. We also use SMMEs in the financial sector code. Chair, I would like to give to some of my council members to respond
wait,
to some of the...
Before you FFTC monopolize the stage, can we allow other
role players also to respond. Because we are left with 28 minutes and members might want to make a follow-up question. We'll come back to you. Can other stakeholders respond to the questions which have been asked?
Thank you, Chair. We'll go to the Commission. The one issue that was raised was around how do we monitor the fronting. So we are using different avenues. For instance, we've got media monitoring, where we just check through the media to see what's coming up, but also through the compliance reports that are submitted. And we also said we've also done site visits where we thought there might be something, probably non-alignment, and we then engage with the company. We also do just random site visits where we visit a company and just to see whether if they claim that they're level 2 or level 1, whether they are indeed a level 2 or level 1. And we found some of them to be actually fronting and we've required those for investigation. What we also do is that we receive tip-offs from people, because sometimes they might find that the person that is affected is working for a particular company, so they'll report the company to us and we have them engage on them. And we also do information sessions because we find that there's a gap in education where people are not aware really what are the implications of BBBE and how they can be protected. So through information sessions as well, we have been able to reach a number of people. Now, fronting, whatever is, how prevalent it is, more than 85% of the cases that have been reported, fronting has been the major driving issue. So there's a lot of cases where, and we feel we have started in touch with this because based on just the information sessions and engagement, if over 85% of the cases that we receive on fronting, that means there's much more on the ground that we have not yet reached. And then on the issues of penalties, the Act does provide penalties, but you must mention that it's over-criminalized. So whatever investigation that we may embark on, if we then issue findings and we feel that the company needs to be penalized, we have to refer the matter to the NPA for them to take it to court if they do decide. But there are fines for individual decisions. It could be up to 10 years in jail for a company up to 10% of its annual turnover. But it also provides us with a leeway where we can order for cancellation of contracts. So we have in some instances actually ordered that the particular contract must be cancelled based on misrepresentation of BBBE's data. Some of these cases we have posted them on our website so that you can see what were the issues that were coming through. And also it says that if somebody is then convicted, the state can actually bar those people from dealing with state or getting contracts or tenders from the state for up to 10 years. And you can also take the particular director to court and have them declared as a delinquent director. So there are some ways and means that you can do. What we've also done is that because it does allow us to do settlements, where if you feel that the black person has been aggrieved and taking the matter through the NPA route might actually benefit them, then use the alternative dispute resolution mechanism and then order the company to pay a certain amount. And we found that in some instances this has worked much better for black people than taking the matter through the court. And some of the money we've then asked them to divert it towards NACFA to fund kids based on the Fields Must Fall initiative. And then the issue of poor versus where it felt that BBBE is not really benefiting the poor. Hence, the legislation introduced the issues of your broad-based schemes and your employee share ownership schemes and your trust. This was intended then to benefit a wider pool than just in certain individuals. Unfortunately, what we have found when we started CHAIR was to find that people actually now are abusing these schemes. The money doesn't reach the beneficiaries. When you look at this particular chart, you find that they claim it for skills development, they claim it for SED. When you ask for a list of the supposed black beneficiaries, they cannot even produce that list. So that shows you that there's a serious problem. And because the main issue that you ask is that there's five elements. When you're doing a BE initiative, you must ask yourself, what am I addressing? If it's skills development, you cannot claim that it's ownership. And that's where the challenge is coming from, where people are saying we are now changing the legislation. We're not changing the legislation. These are things are in the legislation. We say what is ownership, when what rights must come out if you're doing ownership. And then the issue of cost, we've not looked at the cost of putting a triple B deal together. Our main focus currently has been the value of the transaction that has been registered, and we did report that currently for 2017-18 it was 188 billion of the value of the transactions that we registered. But not to say did they engage advisors, did they engage lawyers, and what did that cost? No, we have not looked at that. And then the designing number, what we have been told is that when the new admin came into place, some people thought triple B is going to be phased out, so they played let's wait and see game to see whether the new admin is then going to phase out triple B. Hence, some people are not reporting last year because they thought there would not be a need, and which is why then now we have to engage again with the JSE to say, but this is a requirement the companies need to report, and also engage with the Auditor General to say government as well needs to report, and now we've seen an activity in that area. And then the commissioner will add where I might not have to take up some of the issues.
Thank you. Just to conclude.
Turn this up for the commission.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. That has been nice 20 seconds. Okay. Chair, just to say that in terms of the approach for triple B, from a policy perspective, because we just implement policy as the regulator, as it is in the legislation, but from a policy perspective, triple B is hinged on two areas. So it will be empowerment of black people in terms of in the existing economy, the market that is currently existing, which is why you see that there's ownership deals on existing entities. But the second arm of it is now the funding of new businesses by black people. That is where government needs to put in money and funds also to support black businesses to create those new businesses so that they can then play a role in the market. So it is important that we look at it from both sides. So our role now is to monitor now the implementation on the ground, but government still remains responsible for running programs and facilitating the funding of entrepreneurs. Chair, we've already indicated that in respect of the financial sector, in terms of access to funding, the 272 transactions, which are worth 188 billion, only 19% funding came from the financial sector. So there is an opportunity to increase that so that they make finance available to empower black people to be able to start their own businesses but also to acquire stakes in existing businesses. The last point that I just wanted to make sure is...
Will you finish?
Yes, I will, Chair.
The
last point that I want to emphasize, and I think we, you know, the question was, what is there to lose for an entity that is not compliant? What should be there to lose is directly in Section 10 of the Act, which says that you should not get any authorization, any license, any concession, any contract with government. That is the big leverage that government should be using, and we are still emphasizing that that should be done, in addition to the other penalties that are in the legislation.
Thanks.
Well,
thank you very much, Chair. I'll be brief. So just on the question on debit order abuse, the National Payment System Department of the SARB and the Payment Association of South Africa have already issued a directive on authenticated collection. Industry is in the process of implementing this. By April 2020, no non-authenticated books will be in operation, so if a debit order has not been authenticated by the customer, it will not be allowed to go through the customer's account. So that's what we've done since the last conversation we had on debit order abuse. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Yes,
thank you, Chair. On the questions directed to National Treasury, the first one was that the BEE funding model currently benefits a few people. I think that's precisely our frustration as National Treasury, and you saw the positioning of our presentation was that a priority for Treasury is that transformation must be mass-based and it must be sustainable. So that's precisely the issue. We don't want to look only at ownership and management control, but we also want to see the financial services, products and services that are being provided, how are they transforming people's lives. So
on the first question, that's precisely the frustration of the treasury. On the second issue of economic growth, again, we are in agreement with you there, where I think we understand that economic growth and transformation are two sides of the same coin. I think one of our previous ministers have said that we cannot have transformation without economic growth, and we cannot have economic growth without transformation. So the two are always aligned, and the two always go with each other. On the third issue, on the status of retirement funds and black ownership through institutional funds, the last research that Treasury commissioned looked at the figures of JSE listed companies in 2013, and that figure was at 13%, which looked at retirement funds, life policies, as well as collective investment schemes. But we don't want to end there. We want to go further to say we want black people to have direct ownership. Because if we are looking at institutional funds, this is indirect ownership. But we are saying over time, to realize true transformation, we want direct ownership. So I'm a member of the Government Employees Pension Fund. I have no idea where the PIC is investing my money, so I want to be able to access the capital markets myself. On the fourth issue, it was the issue of calculating the cost of the BEE intervention. I'm not aware of any research that has been done in this space, so I will forward that to Mr. Ramanas. Yeah. So we have not done any research on this.
Thank you. My name is Orlando Makuela from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. I'm responsible for supervising retirement funds. There was a question on old mutual, so I thought we should respond to it. So, Chair, old mutual was an unfortunate incident. There is a requirement for funeral policies to be paid within 48 hours when claimed. Chair, there's a lot which happened behind the scenes, and that's the critical point I would like to make. That as the regulator, we have engaged with Old Mutual to try and resolve the issue. It's not all the time that we will go public and indicate what we have done behind the scenes, but just to assure the public that there is a lot that we do, and going forward, we will be monitoring quite carefully how institutions are treating their customers. So, Chair, key is that we do a lot behind the scenes, and as a regulator, we have to be careful and strike the balance how much we tell the public and how much we keep behind the scenes. But at least you can see some of the positive outcomes coming out of some of the situations. Thanks, Chair. Yes. Let me summarize this just a few minutes, and I know there are members who are going to debate here in the chamber at 2 o'clock, because we are having a debate on the tax bill, and members of this committee are supposed to take part in that debate. Who is responsible for convening a summit, Mr. Momo?
NetBank.
Which NetBank? That's the CEO of the NetBank, which is not here.
It's formally, the first one was done on the NetBank, so it's under their auspices.
But the NetBank, yeah.
Well, they...
what were you talking about when you said you were the NetBank?
There are all just coaches.
Yeah.
There are just.
Oh. Okay. Mr. Mom, can we meet NetLeg as soon as possible? Probably before Parliament rises. We are not playing here. We were not elected to come and play. So
Parliament rises, is it on the other, is it on the fifth? Yeah, we must meet them before the 6th. They must come down here. Yeah. And we discuss about the subject, the treasure. I don't have to emphasize some of the issues here, but the issue is that we need the summit as soon as possible. We'll have to set the time frame as to when should that summit be held. Parliament, in the last Parliament, the fifth, has adopted the report of the 2017 and has given instruction that there should be another summit on the financial sector. And they even emphasize that it is urgent. It is the record of Parliament. So we are not raising these issues because we are sentimental, but it's the decision of the National Assembly. So the sooner we have that, the better. So that we can discuss the implementation of all the resolutions that have been taken before. All these other reports that will come in May and others, we have to do something. You can't dispute that there's a high concentration of the economy in a particular region. Unless you don't stay here in South Africa. Even the president, when he was addressing black business, said they had to concede. And he gave a breakdown of statistics in terms of management of blacks, women, people with disabilities. There is a report published by the Minister of Labour, Minister May. I think it was in August. Quite a very ugly report. So we are not sitting here and theorizing about lack of transformation. We have got reports authenticated, backed by data, that transformation is moving at a snail's pace and something must be done. And Comrade Mom, I don't think when you said to transform banks is difficult because that money does not belong to the shareholders, it belongs to clients. You were saying that black people can enter there. You made a statement which is quite philosophical. And I should not interpret it that it allows for banks not to have a black entrance. I think you meant something else. Those shareholders who are there, how did they become shareholders of those banks? If there was nothing that was done before. Banks make huge business with government. Yes, I've been in this government for 94. You know that corporate home we were together. Part of the money they make is from government, which the money comes from taxpayers. Without government, those four or five banks will not be having the money that they have today. So we shouldn't be told things which are neither here nor there. I don't think we are at that stage. We are at the stage now where we are saying there must be real transformation. We must hold the summit and we have to take the report back to Parliament. That since the last time when you adopted the report of 2017. This is what has been done. And the authorities and structures which are here, you must have chief, otherwise we will disband you, we will dissolve you. You can't just sit there and look at people doing things, because there's this tendency that companies don't comply, and on top of that, they budget for penalties. Yes. They budget money for penalties. What is 5 or 10%? They put it aside. You penalize them, they quickly pay it, and it becomes business as usual. That's That can't be allowed in our country. No. So, Alan, talk to NetBank. We'll meet them with the treasurer next week so that we decide as to when should this summit be held next year, so that they should start with the preparations. Thank you very much, members of Parliament and all the stakeholders that honored the invitation and made the presentation. We'll make follow-up on what we have discussed, and you will hear from us as to how we take the process forward. The meeting is adjourned.